We're doing the Netivot Shalom on Parshat Ba'alotcha. The Netivot Shalom is considered one of the most pleasurable and accessible works of Chassidut. The Rebbe of Slonim passed away only a few years ago, and he wrote this work, which really takes basic Hasidic concepts within the parasha and elaborates on them. So our topic tonight is Va'ish Moshe Anav Mod Mikol Adam, Parshat Ba'alotcha. The man Moshe was more humble than any man. Vayish Moshe Anav Mod Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Adama. V'amru Chazal, our sages taught, Chafdalit Mukei Shechin. There are 24 types of people that have boils. There are 24 types of boils. You guys ever stand around someone that's covered with acne? Or someone that's covered with boils, has a really bad skin disease, and he notices there's a parameter around him where no one comes close? You guys ever see that? You enter an elevator and there's someone like slopping over as they cough. And suddenly you see there's this invisible parameter. Everyone takes a step back.
You see a homeless person on the subway, and the whole place stinks like nothing you've ever smelled before. And everyone goes to one side, and he's laying down, sleeping on one of the benches on the other side.
So the Talmud wanted to describe people who are very low on their spirit, on their self-esteem. So the Talmud, their example in their day was people who were covered with boils. The Talmud says there are 24 types of people covered with boils, 24 types of skin diseases that are this bad. And Moshe was more humble than all of them. Odita b'gemara, we have another gemara in Tractate Chulin. Gadol shneimar b'Moshe yotam ma shneimar b'Avraham. What it says about Moshe is greater than what it says about Abraham. By Avram, Abraham says about himself, V'anochi afar v'ayfer, and I am but dust and ash. That's how Abraham describes himself. When he prays before God, he's coming to argue his case. How could you destroy all the people of Sodom? So he says, but I'm worthless. I'm just ash and dirt. But Moshe and Aaron say, V'nachnu ma, what are we? We're not even the dust in the air. We're nothing. Avram gave himself the credit of being dust and ash. Moshe and Aaron say we're nothing. So we have to understand what's really going on here. Undoubtedly, Moshe really knew what a giant he was. Moshe knew on what level he was. Moshe wrote the words in the Torah, Velokam Navi Od Kemoshe. No prophet ever rose like Moshe, Asher Yidao Hashem Panim El Panim. That Moshe knew him, that Hashem knew Moshe, Hashem had a relationship in which they would speak face to face, so to speak. The verse says, Pel Pea Daber Bo Tmunat Hashem Yabit. In our parasha, Moshe is described as the only prophet who speaks like one would speak with his friend. Every other prophet is enveloped in fear when God speaks. Moshe speaks face to face, and he, so to speak, sees a vision where he doesn't get scared. So how is Moshe so extraordinarily humble? When Moshe knows that throughout all of world history, no one ever attained his height. So he is standing at the top of the mountain. He knows no one's ever come close to him. And yet he is described as the most humble man. How? If we want to understand, so we'll begin with an allegory. You have a barrel filled with water. So long as it's standing alone, so it's very valuable, that barrel of water. But if you take that barrel, take its contents, and pour it out into the sea, so the water is still there. But the fact that it's no longer in the barrel and you can no longer access it, so suddenly that water is worthless. And if you take barrels filled with the most expensive wine or the most expensive water and you dip them into the salty sea, they all lose their value. When you can separate water, put them in their own barrel, then the water has its own identity, it has its own value. But when you attach them to that huge body of water that encompasses the whole world, when you attach them to the sea, suddenly the water loses all value. Doesn't matter how much water is in the barrel. You could have the biggest barrel in the world. But once you put that in the sea, suddenly it loses all value. Because it's nothing compared to the great sea. And how much more so when a Jew connects to Hashem, blessed be He. When one is connected, so then a person feels like his essence is less than a drop in the sea. That's why if you look at the 24 types of people, that society looks down at them. And so they are humble. But you know what? When they stand in front of the mirror at home, they say, my hair is not so bad. You know, when they could stand alone, so then they feel like, hey, I got what to offer.
Wait, in comparison to how would they be in public?
In public, the public keeps giving them the feeling that they're worthless. People give them that feeling. But when they stand alone, they can feel like, I have value. Gam im ktanim hem, harei tofsim makom. Even if they're very little, you guys have probably seen people do this in front of the mirror, right? Now, they're reassuring themselves. I'm here. Aval nafsho shel Moshe nemucha mikulam. When we say Moshe's soul was more humble than all of them, shaya besi hi batlut la'Hashem itbarach v'ke'ain ve'efes ha'muchlat. That's because Moshe was connected to Hashem. So Moshe saw himself as an extension, as part of what has to happen in the world, but an extension of something that's so much greater. And that's why Moshe was more humble than anyone else. Not because he didn't see his value, but it's like you have the biggest reservoir of water. But you know full well that reservoir, once it goes into the Great Sea, once you put it into the Atlantic, it's nothing. It's lost. It's a part of the Atlantic. That's what Moshe felt. Moshe lived God. He lived the concept that God is here. So if God is here and this is God's world and I'm a part of it, so what am I? There's a whole planet here. Wow, okay. How many cells are in Moshe Rabbeinu? Yes, Moshe achieved a lot. But Moshe saw the bigger picture. Now, if we really develop this idea really gives us tremendous insight in many different directions. Let's begin in a positive direction. You're after a long day's work, and you come home, and you notice you forgot to buy food. Your fridge is empty. So now you really want to get an early night's sleep. You force yourself back into the car. You start heading out to get some food for supper. There's a lot of traffic. You're sitting in the traffic, and you're wondering, why is everyone driving so slowly? You finally come to the parking lot. It's all littery. You go back into the store, and there you see a bunch of other singles just like you, trying to get something to put together for supper. You get one of those wagons where the wheel keeps turning to the left and you're always pulling right. And you start going down the aisle trying to get what you need, and you really want to be at home in bed, but you're out there in the supermarket. And then after you finish loading your cart, making your way through all the other people who really don't want to see you in the aisle, just like you don't want to see them in the aisle, you stand in line, and the guy in front of you is sneezing and wiping his nose, and you see he's really in desperate need of another tissue. And it's not so comfortable to be standing behind him. The guy behind you is yawning and munching on the chips he opened up. And as he's munching, you know, the crumbs are falling out of his mouth. And you're standing there and you feel a little creepy standing in line. You look ahead of you and you see the woman who's had a very long day at the checkout counter. And she's looking there with this drab look. They hand her a coupon and she can't see it clearly. She doesn't have glasses. She picks it up. She puts it down. She's not sure. It doesn't ring well on the register. And your nerves are starting to get shot. And you stand there and you start looking around you. And you feel very fortunate at that moment that you don't have an Uzi on hand. You're looking at the people around you and you look at them and you feel like they're subhumans. You look at the woman at the checkout counter and you wish, why couldn't God have granted her more intelligence? You look at the woman who's trying to pay as the child is pulling on her shirt. And you're getting annoyed and you're getting frustrated. And as the line, everyone's waiting and the line's getting bigger and you see that guy edging from the right thinking he's going to cut ahead of you in line. And you're wondering how to veer your wagon so as to be polite and yet to ensure that he's not going to get in front of you. Your nerves are ticking. And then the woman behind the counter leaves because she has to get the manager to authorize the coupon. And now you see your line, you see all the other lines. They're long, it's the busiest hour of the day. Not enough checkout counters open. You start sweating. Start looking around. and you start snarling. And you look at the people around you and you just pray that kid in front of you is pulling at his mother's shirt. He doesn't turn around because you might just sack him. Pause. This annoyance with all of humanity, where does it come from? It comes from the natural state that our generation, we are most prone to. This self-centered, egocentric attitude where the world revolves around me. And when I look at everyone else, I'm looking at them as a part of what do they mean to me? Right now, the guy in front of me in line means nothing to me other than another obstacle. He is in my way. I want to get out and he's there. So if I could somehow tell him, hey buddy, you know, there's a great sale on the beers in the back, not because I care a bit for him, but maybe I could get him out of my way, that's what I want to do. I look at the world, and I look at the world starting with me, and I have a very hard time looking at anyone else with any value. I look at that woman at the checkout counter, and the last thing that crosses my mind is, hey, maybe she's had a really rough day. Maybe she's suffering a very difficult life. I had a fantastic thing happen to me. One of the kids was hospitalized, and I'm in the hospital, and Friday night I go to shul, and someone welcomes me with this huge warm smile. And I'm looking at this lady, and she obviously feels like I should know her, but I don't know her. And how are you, and how's your kid, and why are you here? And she's having this whole schmooze with me, and I'm not sure who I'm talking to. And after about 5 minutes, it dawns on me that across the street, two houses down, she's the woman who checks out the milk and bread every morning. I'm always standing there, but you know, I didn't recognize her with her wig and all dressed for Shabbos and everything. Okay, turns out that for the last year and a half, I've been going by her in the checkout counter. I never knew. She had a husband who's been hospitalized for 2 years now. And she kills herself going from the hospital to that checkout counter, dealing and praying that her husband will live, and he didn't. I mean, he died a short while later. But there she is, and you look at her, and you don't see everything that's going to be beyond that annoying person. But we don't see the human in them. We see, what does it mean to me? And what it means to me is they're in my way. When we look at Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu can see himself as a part of a greater being, then that's also the way Moshe Rabbeinu looked at everyone else. Part of our issue with all of humanity, and part of our issue and our annoyances on a day-to-day basis, is because we don't see the reflection of God in other people. We barely see other people. We see obstacles. I want it now, and they're in my way, so they are an obstacle. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't only his humility and his attitude to himself, it was also his attitude and the way he viewed other people. The more a person can connect to the idea of the godliness in oneself, in a true way, not in a haughty way, the more a person can connect to the godliness in the fellow being. Suddenly the person in front of me is a human being. So that's one very important idea of Moshe Rabbeinu as a reflection, as a component, a part of God's revelation in the world. So Moshe knows he's achieved what no one else has achieved, but Moshe doesn't stand there and take the praise. Rather, he sees it as a part of the bigger picture. There's another point. Yeah?
So then why, how come if Moshe sees things that way, how come he questions Hashem choosing him?
So who said he questioned it?
He said, no, you should send Aaron. Why you send me? I don't know, right. I'm not worthy.
Okay. So that deserves a long answer. If you remind me tomorrow night, we'll try to get back to it. Does the Tzibur want to go off on this tangent for 10 minutes? How many people want to go off? In order to do it justice, we need about 10 minutes. No. Yes? You're outvoted. So, the next Thursday, remind me, Ezrat Hashem, we'll get back to it.
Too bad you can't
have like your viewers online. So, v'zeh gam biur inyan ha-madriga shenemar b'Moshe yoter al Avraham. So now we understand when Chazal say that Moshe was greater than Avraham, she'av shafar ve'efer gam ken enam nechshavim l'klum. Even though the difference seems to be negligible. Avram says, I am dirt and ash. And Moshe says, I am nothing. Well, dirt and ash is pretty close to nothing. So what did Chazal mean when they said Moshe was greater than Avram? Aval adayin yesh lehem ezem mitziyut kshelatzmam. But dirt and ash is stressing its existence. It's here. Ma she'in ken Moshe Rabbeinu she'ya batel legamrei bivchinat v'nachnu ma she'ino klum. That's not Moshe. Moshe felt, I'm not here. I am fulfilling a task. Here we have to expand this slightly. The Ramar of Moshe Isserlis wrote a work on Jewish philosophy. And he questioned, what did Chazal mean when they said, every prophet was as though they were looking through a glass. Moshe Rabbeinu was as though he was looking through an aspaklaria meira, through clear glass. What does that mean? It means that when God spoke through Moshe, it was as though you were looking through the clearest glass. You were seeing exactly what God wanted. Every other prophet would see a vision, and then they used their own words to express what God told them. So they're prophets, they're giants, but the wording is theirs. So the prophet Jeremiah starts prophesizing as a kid. He has grammatical errors in his prophecies because there's Jeremiah in that prophecy. Isaiah is the most poetic prophet. Maybe Zechariah, Isaiah. So you see, the poetry of Isaiah comes shining through in his prophecies. He's true to the message, but there's a piece of Isaiah in the prophecy. And that's why all the other prophets, you have to understand what they're saying. You didn't do a mitzvah if you read Isaiah and you didn't understand anything. Lemaher shalal chashbaz. What does that mean? If I don't understand that verse, I didn't learn anything. Moshe's Torah is different. Every word is a mitzvah. Every word, if I understood it or I didn't understand it. Why? Because Moshe is like clear glass. There's nothing of Moshe in the prophecy. It's God talking through Moshe. Or, as Chazal worded it, Shechina medaberet mitoch kronos shel Moshe. It's as though God was talking out of his vocal cords. Each word. V'hainu shedavka mitoch ru madregotav shetunat Hashem yabit. And that's because Moshe's elevated status, where he's described as though he saw God's picture, magia shelisi, hibatut v'agashat afsiut b'chinat v'nachnu ma. That goes hand in hand with Moshe saying, what am I? I'm nothing. It's as though you have a person who merits to see the king. He goes into the Oval Office. Arei kasher nichnas b'echalok kulo omer kavod. He walks into the Oval Office and suddenly he sees that everyone talks to him like buddy-buddy. Suddenly he sees they have respect, but no one's shivering there in the presence of the king. So, when a person walks in and he suddenly has the respect. I'm sorry, I read the word ein, and it should have said, and the word is eich, not ein. If he walks in and he sees respect, so then he feels like there's nothing. I'm nothing next to him. Ach elu shemolam lo ru ta melech v'adar kvod malchuto lahem en kol musach b'gdulat ha-melech v'enam b'telim mipanav. When a person has never seen a king, so then, you know, what's the king? I'd shoot hoops with him. ולקח משה רבנו שהגיע למדרגה גבוה ביותר. So the closer you get, the more you see his greatness. You know, Chazal say that. I was walking to catch a bus 3 months ago, and Putin was here 3-4 months ago. And I saw that no traffic's coming, no bus is coming. I asked the policeman standing there, why? Where's all the traffic? He told me President Putin's supposed to drive up the street now. He's coming to the Knesset. So he stopped all traffic. So I went to look. The Gemara says, when a king comes, go look. Because when you see a king traveling by, you start understanding what respect is. You start understanding what royalty is. If you never saw it, you don't begin to understand it. If you start having an understanding of what royalty is, then you'll appreciate Jewish royalty too. So I went there to look. I must say I was very unimpressed.
Really?
Yeah.
Wasn't
royal at all.
George
Bush, yeah, now that's impressive. He comes in with a motorcade of 100 motorcycles. That's impressive. You fly in, I don't know how many planes they fly in, just to have his cars going along with him. Okay, that's impressive. Putin, I don't know, 6-8 cars. It wasn't such a big deal, you know.
Did you see Barack Obama when he came to Israel?
No, but I did see all the helicopters flying with him. You know, when he flew out of the Knesset, they decided they're not going to disrupt traffic. That was impressive. You're not one helicopter. You see a whole slew of helicopters. Okay, then you start understanding. When Netanyahu comes to the Knesset, he comes in one helicopter. But when Barack Obama comes, then you see a fleet flying with him. Okay, that's impressive. I know, because it was right near my house. My kids were asking me, Abba, could we do something? They tried with all their little toys to see if they could hit the helicopters. You see a fleet. Anyone who saw when a president goes with the cars and the motorcycles and everything that goes with him, then you start seeing, okay, that's royalty. So Moshe Rabbeinu, when he had a better understanding of what it means to talk to God, and that's why he was the most humble man. That's why he reached that level where he really felt like, what am I worth? When he recognized, because he had a greater understanding of God's greatness, that's why he was so humble. So now he's going to end the final paragraph, the connection between Moshe and Shabbos. And the Netivot Shalom very often takes us into another realm, explaining to us how this concept connects to Shabbos. Noach and his ark connects to Shabbos. Avraham Avinu connects to Shabbos. The Exodus from Egypt connects to Shabbos. Throughout the Torah, the Netivot Shalom takes you back to Shabbos. Have you guys ever had the beautiful experience of meeting Rav Natan Siegel on a Sunday morning, and he walks over to you and says, "Good Shabbos." So the first time it happened, I was like, "It's Sunday." It took me about a half a year to catch that he's giving me the beautiful spirit of Shabbos on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday. So then Tivot Shalom does that with many parshiyot. According to what we just understood, that Moshe's special level was that he felt connected to Hashem, and he felt, like we said, a drop in the sea, like nothing next to Hashem. So we have to understand that special connection between Moshe and Shabbos. We know, we start our morning prayer on Shabbos. Where do we begin with Moshe? Yismach Moshe b'matnat chelko. We start the morning of Shabbos. Moshe will rejoice with the gift that you've given him, his lot. Ki eved ne'eman karata lo. For you called Moshe the trusted servant. And I think, should we finish this or finish it tomorrow night? Finish it now? Finish? Okay. So, uvazor chadash, v'yom Shabbat yu Moshe Rabbeinu. In the Zohar Chadash it says, the day of Shabbos is Moshe. V'chein itam ha'arizal. And we also have a tradition from the Holy Ari that the acronym of Mizmor Shir Leyom HaShabbat spells out Le Moshe. Out of order. Ve'ainyan b'zeh. So what's the idea of connecting Moshe to Shabbos? The Shabbat Kodesh inyanai patlut p'chinat in. Shabbos is a time when we stop. We're not producing. My iPhone is off, my Facebook account is off, my email is off, my stock exchange is not active, my stock account, my broker, off. I'm ceasing to act. Now, I've turned off, so to speak, my action. Not exactly, but I've turned off that part of my productivity. As the verse alludes and says, 6 days you shall work and do all your productivity, all your work. On Shabbos, on the seventh day, you should cease for the sake of Hashem your God. The idea is, 6 days you have active mitzvos. During the 6 days of the week you give charity. During the 6 days of the week, you put on tefillin, you do proactive mitzvot. But the mitzvah of Shabbos, what am I supposed to do with Shabbos? The mitzvah of Shabbos is stop doing everything else. You aren't doing charity on Shabbos. Your focus is L'Hashem Elokecha. You're supposed to connect with a God. It's a day when you take a step back. A person stops what he wants in the world and says, okay, now I'm taking a day back and connecting with my Creator. The Zohar writes, Shabbos is the day of the soul. Shabbos is the day where we're not focused on the material goods. Interesting, right? What, the Netivot Shalom didn't have cholent on Shabbos? He didn't sleep an extra 4 hours on Shabbos?
It was the atmosphere.
Oh. So it's not... he had his yummy potato kugel on Shabbos. I know, I went to Slanim Hasidim. They have good potato kugel on Shabbos. They have good cholent on Shabbos. But it's still the focus, the connection of Shabbos is a connection that's not focused on the material world. It's spiritual, as our sages said, that a person enters Shabbos, he should look at the world as though he's accomplished everything.
What?
You enter Shabbos, you pause, and you view the world as though you've finished whatever you have to do. You don't look at all the deadlines and say, gee, I really had to do this by now, and I should have done that, and April 15th is coming. There's a whole world before Shabbos and after Shabbos. Comes Shabbos, view the world as though your work is done. That's quoted, that's a mechilta, it's quoted in Halacha also. Rashi on the Torah quotes it also.
But are you not just deluding yourself if your work isn't actually done?
So that's the idea that we say in prayer of Mincha of Shabbos. We say, we were supposed to have on this Shabbos, Menucha Shleima Shata Rotze Ba. A complete rest that you, Hashem, want us to have. On Shabbos, you're supposed to have a complete rest. There's a saying, they say it about vacations. You can't go on vacation and take the work with you. You can only go on vacation when you can leave the work in the office and you can put your mind on vacation. So it's not a new invention. Our sages said it, they derived it from the verse, they said it about Shabbos. When we enter Shabbos, we should be able to feel like, I've done what I had to do this week. Maybe there are a lot of things that are waiting for me for Motzei, Shabbos, and Sunday, that's true. But I enter Shabbos with the feeling, I'm done. We say, Ata kidashta et yom ha-shvi'i lishmecha. You sanctified the day of the seventh day for the sake of your name, Tachlit Maaseh Shamayim Va'aretz, the essence of what you created heaven and earth for. Really? You created heaven and earth so that we wouldn't be productive? We'd have a day of rest? The idea of creation is a person's connection with Hashem. Chazal say, every time you sit and have a steak, every time you focus on something materialistic, you're taking a step back from connecting to spirituality. Oh, we could take the physical and make it spiritual. But if we're focused on the physical, then it's not a stepping stone to spirituality. And I challenge you. One thing, try this Shabbos. One thing. Take one spoonful of soup, of cholent, of salad, of the gefilte fish, whatever you want. Choose one spoonful. And it doesn't even have to be the first. Just don't leave it for the last, because by then you might not want to eat, right? Take one spoonful when you're still hungry and say to yourself, this spoon I'm eating in honor of Shabbos. And sit and savor that spoon. One spoon. You'll realize suddenly that there's a totally different experience of eating. There's that capacity of eating a spoonful of cholent in honor of Shabbos. There was once a famous rabbi who sat at the table in the yeshiva, and there was this student with long payas and a hat, and he's shuckling over his cholent, and he's going, in the name of the honor of Shabbos, and he's gorging out the cholent. So the rabbi puts a hand on his shoulder and says, buddy, what's your name? He says, Chaim. He says, next time say, in the name of the honor of Chaim, and then start eating. That's the truth. When we eat, we'd like to say it's in honor of Shabbos, but it isn't. So try it with one spoonful.
And some,
if I'm eating because my stomach is hungry and I like the cholent and I want a full stomach, so then that's Netanel who's hungry and Netanel who's eating. But if I come to the meal and I say, wow, I have the honor of honoring Shabbos. Hashem said, this is his day. And in honor of his day, I'm supposed to have special foods. And my focus is honoring the Shabbos, the day that Hashem commanded would be a day when I cease from work, and a day that I respect as a commemoration of the fact that he didn't work on this day. As in essence, really, in Shabbos we are accepting the fact that God is king of the world. The fact that on one day I don't work because he said so indicates that the other 6 days when I do work, I'm doing it as his servant. I'm not master of the world. He is master of the world. And he also told me to honor this day, to realize that I was once a servant in Egypt and now I'm a free man, to realize that he created the world in 6 days and he rested on the seventh day. All of this together is my responsibility on Shabbos. And if when I approach the food with that thought, suddenly the food will have a different flavor. And then Tivot Shalom concludes and says that this idea is synonymous with the idea of feeling close to Hashem. That we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu that having respect for Hashem, feeling awe for Hashem, and feeling humble next to Hashem is specifically a reflection of being close to Hashem, not the contrary. And that's what a person's supposed to feel on Shabbos. That closeness. God gave us a day that's just ours. Hashem says, this is the day when you could be with me. Leave everything else. Take a day for spirituality. Take a day where the spirituality and the physical are both in service of Hashem. This is what the Kabbalists say. Why do we say Shabbat Shalom? Because on every other day, there is a struggle. Person says, I want to be spiritual. Then what am I doing gorging my face out? I want to eat. So why do I want to be spiritual? There's a contradiction every other day. On Shabbos, every piece of cholent is in honor of Shabbos. The spiritual and the physical, they meet and there's peace. There's harmony. That's why we say Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.